This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. It's a Thursday, March the 4th, and this is what we have been up to. Well, we've been looking at what's been happening with the OPEC meeting that still has not finished yet. The ministers meeting today on Thursday. Amina Bacar, oil superstar, has been telling us what's what. We've also been having a look at the latest initiative from Qantas, Mystery Flights. Hop on a plane and don't know where you're going. It's a bid in Australia to up regional tourism. And we've been hearing from celebrity chef, the British Bake Off star, Paul Hollywood. He has been catching up with Tom. All of that, plus, as always, your COVID news.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Rich, Tom and Brandy with you through to 11 o'clock this morning. Also got Nadia Swan in the studio. Hey, Nadia.
Hey there, Richard.
Let's look in a bit more detail at some of those top news stories. First order of business, as ever, they want to know those numbers, Nadia, please.
Sure. So we had 2,692 cases that were confirmed from 218,351 tests. Again, really nice high test rate over there. We saw yesterday 225, and a few days before that, 226,000. Another 1,589 people have recovered, so our overall recovery tally stands at 385,587. Unfortunately, 16 more people have died, so our fatalities stand at 1,269. And overall, we've had 399,463 cases diagnosed in the UAE so far, of which 12,607 are currently active. I don't know whether you remember from yesterday's figures, they were 11,520, 10,480 the day before. So again, we're seeing a slight uptick in the number of active cases at the moment there, Richard.
Okay, what about vaccines? What can you tell us about that?
Right, so we're heading well towards the target of vaccinating 50% of the population by quarter one. As we heard yesterday, we've done 61% of the elderly population. So far, we've had 6.1 million doses of the COVID-19 vaccine that have been administered in the country. And apparently, the Ministry of Health say that 73,374 doses were given in the past 24 hours. And so the total number of doses actually stands at 6.1, as I said earlier. That's 62.37 doses per 100 people.
I've just been summoned to Sharjah later today for my 6-month checkup from the vaccine trial.
Oh, excellent.
So maybe they'll tell me if I've had the vaccine or not.
Well, you were wondering about antibodies, weren't you, the other day?
Yeah, exactly. We're all
wondering. So I wonder if they're going to do a test. It'll be very interesting to find out what happens.
We'll figure out what happens. listen, stay with health, Nadia, but it's not COVID-related because it's World Obesity Today. There is a COVID link, though, isn't there? What can you tell us?
Very, very strong. So obesity, as we've heard over the last 12 to 18 months, is very strongly linked to COVID-19 insofar as it really does increase your rate of being one of the fatalities. And on this particular day, one of the leaders from the World Obesity Organization actually had that to say.
This Hopefully, is Professor yes, John Wilding.
That's right.
There's an important message here that we need to consider, which is maybe if we'd been able to do something about the obesity pandemic before the COVID-19 pandemic came along, perhaps we would not have seen such high rates of mortality from COVID-19.
Fascinating stuff. You've been looking into what the UAE has been doing to tackle obesity in particular, Nadia.
That's right. So the numbers that we have from the authorities at the moment, Richard, the UAE's rate of obesity stands at 27.8%. And between adolescents and children, sort of between 5 to 17 years old, that's 17.35%. So again, quite high there. So the UAE Ministry of Health and Prevention has been taking various steps to try and get those numbers down slightly. For a start, for extreme cases, they've got a Centre of Excellence in Sharjah, the Al Qasimi Hospital, and it's the world's first hospital outside of the United States to have received an award for excellence in bariatric surgery. So that's, again, you know, at the extreme end of it when people need far more help. But on a day-to-day basis, they've launched loads of other initiatives. You've got the fitness challenges, Together We Move, promoting physical activity among women. You've got the Maakum campaign and, of course, the Dubai Fitness Challenge, where we have that once a year doing the 30 minutes of exercise for 30 days. And it's also about trying to get an education campaign out there for younger people to make make them understand what living a healthy lifestyle entails, and also cooking and stuff as well. So they've had the junior chef contest, and interestingly, I was looking at something on that, and it was very much in line with what you'll talk about later. The UAE won an award at the International Young Chef Olympiad, and that was in February of this year. Virtual contest, 6 contestants, 24 time zones, 8 days. So again, one of the UAE students who won a silver for his award over there. So again, it's about education and what the authorities are doing to try and increase fitness levels amongst the local population, and also trying to get them to think about living a more healthy lifestyle.
Great British Bake Off isn't going to help with that very much, is it, Thomas?
No.
It's lovely, but...
No.
Yes, lemon meringue pies all round.
Yeah.
Tom's got literally got a book, a cookbook with him in the studio this morning called...
It's called...
Bread.
Dr. Atkins is turning in his grave at the thought of all those carbohydrates.
It does exactly what it says on the book.
We have got the celebrity baking chef, Patisserie, joining us in the not in the studio. We're going to hear from Paul Hollywood. Yeah, so clearly the Swan family takes this stuff.
It's been hammered into them.
More seriously than most.
But also a very accomplished baker during COVID, as we can attest, because you've been bringing in...
I have.
Your baking delights.
I have indeed, yes. I find
and
it
showing
quite,
them off.
I find it quite therapeutic, and there's always someone around that'll come and help themselves. So yes, flapjacks, brownies, the rest of it. So
yeah,
yes,
you find it therapeutic to bake them. You clearly don't eat them because you're about 7% body fat, Nadia.
Gosh, that high, Richard, that high.
Let's look at international news now, Nadia, joking apart. Brazil, this is a serious story. It is having a resurgence, and you've been looking at the global numbers for COVID, haven't you?
It has actually, yes. So very worrying numbers in Brazil as they look at another COVID variant that's coming out from the Amazon region over there. They had a day where they saw their second daily record for deaths in a straight day, 1,910 people dying there. Globally, if we look at Brazil's actually pretty bad insofar as it's almost topping 260,000, second worst after the United States. Globally, if we take a look at cases, 115 million cases, deaths over 2.5 million, recoveries at 91.4 million, and 21.7 million active cases. And the US, which has got the worst outlook at the moment, 29.4 million cases with over 500,000 deaths, followed by India and then Brazil. Russia's at 4.2 million cases with 87,000 deaths, and then the UK in fifth position, also rather sadly, with 4.1 million cases and 123,000 deaths. So that's the situation globally at the moment.
Nadia, thanks very much indeed.
Pleasure. And any details on the Air and News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, let's talk oil now. Joined on the line, delighted to be so, by energy expert Amina Bakker. She is the Deputy Bureau Chief and also Chief OPEC Correspondent at Energy Intelligence. Morning, Amina.
Good morning, Richard.
Massive day, massive week for the energy industry. 5 p.m. Dubai time today. We've got a Zoom call between all the ministers of OPEC, and people are saying there's a bit of a standoff. You've got Saudi Arabia and the UAE who want to keep the taps turned off, but Russia wants to pump and pump. What's the story?
Let me just clarify that, Richard. It's more about Saudi Arabia and Russia. We understand that the UAE's position is that they're ready to go with the group's consensus. Now, Saudi Arabia is taking a more cautious approach to the market. They don't want to open the taps perhaps too fast, which may affect the balances in the market and impact prices negatively. Russia, on the other hand, is more keen to ease the supply cuts. Yesterday, there was a committee meeting. No mention of volumes was discussed between the members. However, we understand from the committee reports that there is room to ease these cuts, and the figures they provided are in the range of 1.4 to 1.5 million barrels a day for April, and then a more phased approach towards the rest of the volumes. They have 500,000 in May and another 400,000 barrels increment in June.
So, I'm looking at your Twitter feed, picture of the Saudi energy minister, Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman, yesterday. There was a kind of pre-meeting for OPEC, the Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee met yesterday. But the real action is a little bit later on today. In simple terms, Amina, who's gonna win, do you think? Will the Saudis get their way and keep restricting oil production, or will Russia get its way and start increasing oil production?
Richard, we've had this situation in the past before where you had Saudi Arabia and Russia having differences in opinions and what policy the group should take. And in the past, these differences were resolved mainly through a compromise. So I'm expecting some form of compromise to take place. And it's really hard to predict what exactly, and I second the Saudi energy minister's comment when he said, don't try to predict the unpredictable, because these decisions really do happen on the day, and so we will probably see some kind of compromise in the middle. In what form that would take is still really it's difficult to predict.
Well, how about the nightmare scenario, which is Russia and Saudi Arabia falling out and coming to no deal at all? And that is not inconceivable, because it's pretty much a year to the day, isn't it, Amina, when we had an OPEC meeting, Saudi Arabia and Russia couldn't agree on this, and the oil price fell to negative 37, which was just incomprehensible for this region. Could that happen again, Amina?
That's right. I knew that you were going to ask me about that, because it can go either, I mean, it goes two ways. Either it completely collapses or they find a compromise. In the last couple of meetings, they've been finding compromises. Now, one major indication we always see before any major OPEC meeting is a call that happens between the leadership of Saudi Arabia and the leadership in Russia, which is Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and Russia's President Putin. That call did happen, and both leaders said that they see value in having OPEC manage markets. So we know that both of them are still aligned. They want this pact to continue. The details and the technical return of how much supply and when, that needs to be worked out between the ministers. But another fallout is very, very unlikely.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Let's talk about the UAE. We began this call, Amina, and you corrected me on my interpretation of the UAE stance. Believe me, you're not alone. My co-presenters and producers spend their life correcting me. But I suggested that the UAE was aligned with Saudi Arabia in wanting to keep production lower. The UAE has been vigilant in cutting production to prop up prices. But you say actually that the UAE is not quite as strident as Saudi Arabia on this. What is the position of the UAE and His Excellency Sahel al-Masrui, our Minister of Energy, someone you know well?
Okay, first of all, Richard, on the compliance side, I agree with you 100%. The UAE has been very, very compliant. We can see from their numbers there is no overproduction. So in terms of sticking to their quota and having commitment to the group, yes, 100%. They've done their part very well. But in terms of policy, we understand that the UAE favors an easing of the supply cuts, and rightfully so, because market fundamentals show that there is more room for supply. However, we also understand that if there is consensus for a rollover, or for some reason or other they decide that it's not the right moment to return the supply, the UAE won't stand in the way. They will go with the group's consensus. So that's the UAE's position at the moment.
Amina Bakker from Energy Intelligence. Busy day for you. I'll let you get back to it. Thanks very much indeed for your time. You're listening to The Business Breakfast, Dubai Eye 103.8.
Catch up on the business headlines with The Bite-Size Business Breakfast.
Right then, flicking through the international newspapers now. Brandy, both you and I have gone for Australian newspapers this morning. What's happening down under that's grabbing your attention? Qantas.
Yeah, okay. So you know how we had the cruise around Singapore and don't get off the boat.
Oh, I hate that stuff. Then the flight to nowhere.
Then we had the flight where you fly around the place but you don't actually land. So, hello, Qantas. Mystery flights where you don't know where you are going for a day. It's a day trip, but you could be going anywhere. $577 a ticket for a one-day trip. They go for the flights last 2 hours. They don't tell you where you're going until you start to land. You can take off from Brisbane, Melbourne, or Sydney. If you want to spend $1,200, you could go business class. They're only going to put 120 people on the plane, and you get to go to a new destination, explore the area, and then hop back on the plane at the end of the day and go back from where you came.
Okay, now I'm interested. You get off the plane.
You get off the plane.
Right. It's not just a bit of a flight round, have a look at Ayers Rock, and then back down to Sydney.
No. So it's trying to support regional tourism. So I am going to assume, with absolutely no evidence whatsoever, that they might be going to smaller regional airports as opposed to the big five or six. They're trying to obviously drum up some money for Qantas, and they're trying to give people something to do.
I actually quite like this idea. I'm looking at the numbers. 1,200, you say, for business class?
Roughly, isn't
roughly.
It? It's 1,233.
Is 3,000 dirhams. That's... I'd be tempted with that. For economy, it's half that, isn't it? So it's about 1,500 dirhams. And you get a really fun day out. You get to explore somewhere interesting. Hopefully, they're going to pull out all the stops when it comes to the F&B on flight as well.
Well, and so here's the other thing. They apparently did this in the 90s, and it was a huge hit, and it sold out. One of the other things that they want to do is to support local tourism operators. So it seems that they are tying up with tourism operators on the ground, because once you land, you don't just go off and hang out in Kmart for 3 hours. You could be dipping your toes in the turquoise waters of a tropical island. You could be enjoying country hospitality at its finest. You could be sipping a grape-based beverage in an award-winning grape farm.
Which is where you set your first book, isn't it?
Yes. Grape farming. You don't know. And whatever you end up doing, I quote, it will involve a scrumptious lunch.
I would say sign me up, but of course you can't sign me up because I can't go because I don't live in Australia and they won't let me in. But if they did, I would.
But there
Tom,
you go.
1,500 chips, economy class, 3,000 business.
I don't think, no. I mean, I don't know. I mean, no. I think I would. Do you need the stress at the airport? I mean, I take your point that, yeah, maybe they're just going to give you a really nice meal when you're in there. But I just don't think that's the case these days. COVID regulations mean that you can't refill things and you can't serve outrageous things. Everything comes pre-packed, etc. I'm sure it did before anyway, but no, it's not. It doesn't really fill me with a huge amount. I could give you other venues and reasons to spend that 1,500 dirhams pretty easily.
Okay, go on.
No, you just have a very good long, you know, proper Tom Urquhart long lunch. You know, that's a good starting point. I mean, you'd need to bring a bit more cash than that, but you know, you don't need the hassle of getting into a plane and go through immigration and not really getting anywhere.
Staying with Australia, my pick of the international newspapers this morning is the Sydney Morning Herald, much beloved of Malcolm Taylor.
House prices. Please make it house prices.
It's not house prices. It's a very naughty boy. Here's the headline. Greensill expects to reach a deal on selling its operating business this week. This is the Australian mango farmer turned banker, Lex Greensill.
The jokes and the euphemisms are writing themselves in my head.
And his multi-billion dollar finance company has blown up. SoftBank, you know, the Japanese guys? Mm-hmm. Abu Dhabi's got a chunk of that.
Saudi's got a chunk of that.
The big chunk of that. They've lost billions out of this. It's complicated. It's have you seen this one? It's a supply chain finance company. And the mango farmer thing is really interesting. Basically, he grew up in Australia, in rural Australia. Maybe, have you set a book in, where is it called? Bundaberg.
I have not set a book in Bundaberg, but they do make very fine ginger beer.
It's an agricultural...
And other beverages.
I've got the Whittaker's ginger beer Bundaberg chocolate still in my fridge. One of my best friends. This chocolate retails for like $5 a block. Right. Think of a Cadbury's block of chocolate, same sort of size. She spent $35 sending it to me, $5 worth of chocolate. It took about 4 months to get here. I can't bring myself to eat it. It's in the fridge like some kind of prize relic.
Well, the pride of Bundaberg, the agricultural area of Australia, which makes various food and drinks, including mangoes, is a gentleman called Lex Greensill. He's 44 years old, relatively young.
That wasn't the language that you used in the notes this morning, Dean.
No.
The language you used in the notes this morning, Dean, I've never seen you write notes before. We'll just leave it there.
Well, yeah, what happens on tour stays on tour. Lex Greensill, 44 years old, born and raised on a mango farm in rural Australia. And he spotted a problem with the way that supply chain was financed for farmers. It's complicated stuff, but essentially that's it. So he set up a company that would offer them cheaper finance. He felt they were getting a raw deal from the bank, so he set up a supply chain finance company, named after himself, Greensill Finance, and it was a huge hit. He was a paper billionaire. SoftBank bought $2 billion worth of it just 2 years ago, 2019, and it was all going great guns. However, this week it seems to have exploded for various reasons, and again, it's quite complicated, can't go into it. But he is an extraordinary chap. Mango farmer, couldn't afford to go to university. His parents couldn't afford to send him to university. So he basically paid for himself to go to university and worked on a mango farm by day and studied law by night. Ended up in London as a banker, set up this company 10 years ago. Was a billionaire for a while, probably not much longer. This is him maybe being a little bit smug, which is alluding to my notes earlier on. Earlier on this year, this is him talking to the BBC, Tom. Because what he did during the pandemic, because he's based in London, he's Aussie, but he's based in London for the past 15 years. He created a system where workers on not particularly high wages could get their salaries, not on a monthly basis, but on a daily basis. So this is him during the pandemic in happier times talking about that system and why he thinks it's great.
We've built our business serving now more than 2 million customers in over 175 countries to deliver ultra cheap credit to businesses. With the arrival of COVID-19, there is a need to help the nurses, the janitors, porters, doctors. Yesterday, Pret said that every NHS employee will be able to get a free cup of tea. Well, our business is one where we pay people and businesses faster. And recently, we launched an app called Earned, which allows employees to get paid every day if they wish. It's our free cup of tea.
That's what he said a while ago. Lex Greensill, the Australian financier, his company Greensill, is in all kinds of trouble at the moment. We'll be watching this one for you. You're listening to The Business Breakfast, Dubai Eye 103.8.
Just the highlights. This is the bite-sized Business Breakfast.
Paul Hollywood is a celebrity. He's an English celebrity chef. He's also a television presenter. He's best known for being a judge on The Great British Bake Off since 2010. He has been a part of the furniture on that series ever since the first series. I think they're coming into their 12th or 13th series, which goes to air next week over in the UK and worldwide. I mean, just to give, I know we keep banging on about the significance of Bake Off and the impact it's had. If you think about it, because what they went, it was on BBC, wasn't it? And then it went to Channel 4 in the UK, two terrestrial channels, a couple of seasons ago where they made the shift. The last series that was on the BBC back in 2016, 9 of the top 10 most watched programmes of the entire year 2016 were Bake Off episodes.
No way.
Yeah. 9 of the top 10. 16.03 million viewers watching the finale.
What was the outlier?
I don't know what the other one was,
actually. It's got to be Dancing with the Stars or something.
It'd be something like that, yeah. Because, funny you should say that, because along with Dancing with the Stars and those other franchisee ones that do really well, it is one of the great sort of exports into international, over 200 countries it's now exported to.
Well, I was just looking at the number I've got is 196 territories. I didn't think the United Nations had 196 countries, but it's just a global phenomenon, isn't it?
Yeah. Bake Off diplomacy.
Yeah, you just imagine them all tuning in at a certain time on the island of Nauru, couldn't you, to watch episodes, see if you get a soggy bottom or not. That would be the way forward. It's success in the UK I get. It's the international success that I don't get, and it's given, of course, international acclaim to all those involved. None more so than Paul Hollywood, who was basically a hotelier, baker, private baker before he got his acclaim on TV. Anyway,
he was at Greg's making sausage rolls before this.
Don't mention
it?
Greg's to him. Do not mention Greg's to him.
Why?
Yeah, Greg's is a no-go area with Paul Hollywood. There is artisan bakers and Paul Hollywood and everything that he stands for. and then there's Greg. So that was not a way, not where, somewhere I wanted to go with him. However, did go elsewhere. Basically, this has spawned a whole other. He's written 8 books. He's presented several TV shows, not just cooking, but also motorsports around the world. So in the last 10 years, he's been a busy man. And given that extraordinary work schedule and a rather grueling travel itinerary before lockdown, I started by asking him, we caught up on Zoom the other day, how COVID and lockdown had been for him personally.
To be honest, I enjoyed the rest. I did City Bakes, and I sort of travelled everywhere from South Africa to St. Petersburg to San Francisco and Iceland, and that pretty much encompasses where I went, every city in between. I was tired. I did a trip across Japan, and I did this trip across America on a chopper. And I went from New York to LA, and I was tired. And when COVID came along, I just finished this run of bake-offs, an American bake-off, and I was exhausted. Then lockdown sort of kicked in, and I went, ah. So actually, I've been managing to do a lot of work around the house, a bit of gardening, cutting the grass, painting, tinkering with the bike. And so I've enjoyed that. I've enjoyed that me time and getting to know me again, weirdly enough. Because I think you do lose contact with yourself when you're so busy, and you know, and it's nice to be busy, let's be honest. And I think ultimately COVID just calms you down a little bit and makes you think about stuff.
Which got me thinking as well when we're having this conversation. There's going to be a time, isn't it, in all of our lives, somewhere in the not so distant future, when we sort of sit back at the end of the day and you go, you know what? I could kill for 2 weeks of isolation anytime round about now, because you don't really appreciate it until you got it. I know when you're in it, you don't want to be in it if you're in it for all the wrong reasons, etc. But be careful for what you wish for these days. And I just wanted to know from Paul whether that time in lockdown had been that sort of much needed time of reflection for him to allow him to put things into perspective.
I think not taking things for granted is what I learned. You know, I think being happy with what you've got. I think, you know, I'm very lucky. I live in rural part of Kent in the middle of nowhere, and there's just nothing around. When the sun was shining, as it is today, fortunately, it's beautiful. There's nowhere better. You know, it's lovely sitting out in the garden. And it can be, the wind can be chilly occasionally, but I've got a little pizza oven. I'll make a little pizza of myself and I'll be happy, you know, but I think just being happy and contented with what you've got is important.
The thing I found fascinating about my chat with him was the fact that he just kept referencing about baking as well, and not just baking on an industrial scale or baking to make cash, baking for himself, just taking himself out to cook a few pizzas or his morning banana bread that he bakes every single morning as well. Which led us on to our next question about the sort of the boom in baking. Yeah, okay, COVID-19 has been a horrible time for a lot of people, but could one potentially make the argument that baking has been something of a COVID win, for want of a better phrase, or is it just cooking in general, given the fact that people are doing or being given more time to do what they want at home?
I think it's quite energising, baking, and I think it does two things. One, it occupies your mind, and two, it educates the person baking, but also more importantly, if the kids get baking, they understand what goes into their food, which I think is important. Baking is unique to cooking, because cooking, you can add a little bit of salt, a little bit of salt there, a little bit of sugar, maybe an egg, whisk it up, a few herbs. Yeah, that's fine. Baking is not like that. It is to a degree, but baking is more scientific. So you have to follow a specific recipe to get the right thing at the end. Your oven has to be good. It has to be serviced. It has to be cleaned. Your scales are probably the most important. It needs to be quite accurate. But if you follow those very basic rules, at the end of it, when you finish baking, you're satisfied. And what we have found during COVID is, well, first of all, we realize that a lot of people are watching Bake Off, because what happens is people follow recipes or a technical challenge they particularly liked, and then they start baking. Banana bread's been huge during lockdown. Yeah. I make a lot of my bread at home. I've been making my bread for a number of years now, and I make sort of 2 loaves every 4 days or so, but it's quite specific. I have it for toast with a soft-boiled egg in the morning.
Yeah,
and it's very difficult for me to buy somebody else's bread or use that. Soft sliced bread, that has its place, but not on my breakfast table with my chuggy egg. But I think baking is really helped people out. if it's spawned cottage industries in the UK, then it's done its job as well.
Did he just call it a chucky egg?
A chucky egg, which is, yeah, that sort of took me back a little bit as well. A little too close to where the fruit fell from the tree, isn't it, as it were?
Is this guy like 170 kilos, the amount of baked produce he has?
He holds himself together pretty well. It's. I mean, he's not shy about, you know, the fact that, you know, he loves his baking. He loves what he creates as well. And he's very sort of self-deprecating when it comes to the trying of different dishes and the fact that he loves exactly what he bakes. But, yeah, soft eggs on banana bread?
No. Butter on banana bread, really cold and salted.
Yeah, I'm not convinced on that one. I'll give it a go nonetheless.
Very quickly, what was our pandemic baking product of choice, Tom?
Well, yes, I tried the sourdough. It's just bread in general.
Brandy?
I made Tom's sausage rolls.
Oh, yes. They were very good.
Yorkshire puddings.
Sausage rolls.
We've spoken a lot about the economic impact, but what about the sort of mental health impact as well? Something that so many people are focusing on here. Given the fact that a lot of people were cooking or baking, and given the concerns for mental health, could baking or cooking have helped a lot of people who were stuck in lockdown to cope and deal with COVID?
You know, if you say to kids, even a lot of kids in the UK or anywhere in the world, you say, would you want to bake with me? Not me. Yeah. Would you want to bake with the parents, or do you want to play on your Xbox? I think Xbox has passed. So I think now they're saying, I want to bake, because they're going to make something delicious probably at the end of it. So they can make cakes to get into icing. It looks fantastic. And I think baking for the first time ever is quite cool for kids to do. And I think once you make something cool, then it's all right. I mean, this year's season of Celebrity Bake Off, which starts next week actually in the UK. Yeah. I don't know whether you get it in Dubai later, but you may do. Yeah. And we've got KSI on and Dizzy Rascal. I mean, and we've got someone from Little Mix. I mean, how you don't get any cooler than that. I'm down with the kids. So the kids are watching KSI baking and going, KSI's baking. I mean, bless him, I didn't know who KSI was. I had to sort of check it out and go, who's KSI? I don't know who he was. But it was lovely to have him on the show. He's a big fan of Bake Off, so, and actually he did all right as well, so it was good.
Who's KSI?
I don't know.
KSI is an influencer. He is a YouTuber and influencer, massive on the gaming industry back in the UK, but further afield. He's also one of these ones. Who's that one in America? Logan Paul, isn't it? You got the Paul brothers.
Who came out here?
Yeah. Yeah,
he did.
Yeah, you got, and both of them have sort of transferred into the boxing ring in recent times. KSI's done the same. Millions of followers the world over. Okay, next one needs a bit of explanation. Tenuous link. I've been banging on about the fact that COVID-19, a lot of us use quite militarised and weaponised language around COVID-19. We keep referring to it as a battle, as we're on the front lines, as the fact that we are in lockdown. It's much like being, you know, bombarded by this hidden enemy out there. So I refer to my history books, and after any major conflict, there's always been a baby boom after a major conflict. Now, I wasn't for a moment suggesting there's going to be a baby boom after COVID-19.
No, New Zealand has already registered birthwise. Headline, familiarity does not breed contempt.
But what I wanted to know is, was the baby boom, was there the potential that instead of a baby boom to have a baker boom?
I think ultimately you could have, I mean, obviously baking food generally, and food programs and antique programs and car programs go around in circles. You know, they come around and something comes back around again. And baking, we've been around now on Bake Off for 12 years this year, so it's been a while. And I think it's always been in the UK anyway. We know that we're a whole nation of bakers. You know, grandma, grandmother's got recipe, dad, mum have got recipes dating back hundreds of years from their ancestors. And I think it's important that, you know, we bring them out and show them off for what they are. I mean, there's some great recipes, some awful ones, to be honest, as well. But there are some amazing cakes and bakes and pies and puddings that people are making. But obviously, we were a nation of bakers before, so all Bake Off have done is actually create a frame for that to work, to show off what we do. I mean, I also judged the American one on ABC. Yeah. And again, the Americans are slightly different. They're very similar, actually. You can see where a lot of the pies and puds came from Germany or Italy or Ireland or Spain. And you see these historical ones from Europe. And obviously, as the migrants went over to the US, they brought these old recipes with them. And then they've changed slightly, utilizing the ingredients that are in the US, and created something that's different, totally different. Mm. So you can track baking. And it is very much what we are. You know, nomadic people tend to have flatbread because it didn't stay in one place for too long. So flatbread is prevalent in those sort of countries.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating because it's a history of us baking.
We've done science. We've done history. What next with Paul Hollywood? We've talked about the impact of baking, etc. Listen, he's been in lockdown like everyone else back in the UK. That's prevented a lot of filming, a lot of travel as well. It's also prompted a bit of a first, a bit of a, dare we say it, pivot, because he has broadened his horizons for the first time into the world of podcasts.
Well, Hollywood and Byrne is basically a podcast, which I was talking to Shaky Byrne about. Shane Byrne is 6 times British Superbike champion, MotoGP rider, World Superbike rider, an amazing guy. And he had a nasty accident in 2018, which sort of laid him up and sort of curtailed his career so far. But we got to know each other, and I was a big fan of Shaky anyway, so... I was into bikes, so we met up and we've been for rides together just very quickly and very, because he finds it difficult to ride since the accident. Nice to get that sorted. But we just spent time talking about racing, and we've obviously got this connection with motorbikes. So I love seeing him, catching up and having a chat over a coffee and talk about bikes. And basically we thought, let's do a podcast. You know, during COVID, it's the ideal time that people have got that extra bit of time to sit and stickers on in the background here is waffling away. The Evelina Hotel, the Royal Hospital, the Royal Marsden, the Cancer Hospital, and also Porchlight, to be involved, which is a homeless charity. We thought if we can raise anything for them as well, it's all good. And so that's where it started from, really. So in the end, we've done a few now. We've done Charlie Borman comes out this week. I was done last week. We've done Shaky, and we've done another guest, which... we're following it over the weeks to come. And now we're sort of looking at who else do we do? Who else do we chat to? Do we chat to some of the bakers I've met in the tent, you know, some of the celebs in the tent, which is a possibility. But we actually, although bikes and cars are sort of loosely connected with it, by the time we talk to people like Charlie Borman, we're not actually talking about bikes and cars. We're talking about the emotional feeling about traveling around the world with a mate, Ewan McGregor, and how did that make him feel?
Does everyone just go motorbiking with Ewan McGregor? I feel like it's a thing.
I think so. That's all you can do with Ewan.
Charlie Borman, just, yeah. baking this morning. I have the most popular baking Google searches of the pandemic in front of me.
Go on.
For the UK. Because we're talking baking in the UK here, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, we are talking... We've been talking to Paul Hollywood, who is a celebrity baker, if you like. He's also one of the judges of Bake Off. But it goes further than that, I think. Just because the franchise model of a show like Bake Off, what did we say? It was over 200 countries now that they export to. So, but it does beg the question, doesn't it? I mean, if you are in Guinea-Bissau... just how readily available is natural yeast and spatulas?
Spatulas. We are told by the guys at Spinney's that baking trays and all the accoutrement were flying off the shelves last year. Okay, I'm going to give you from the Google searches what everyone was searching for baking-wise from the bottom upwards. Number 9, chocolate cake. Okay. Number 8, shortbread. Good O. 7, flapjacks. Meh. 6, bread. That's very general, isn't it? 5, brownies. 4, scones or scones, depending on who you are. 3, carrot cake. 2, lemon drizzle cake. And there can only be number 1, can only be...
bananas.
Banana bread.
Really? Is that extraordinary? Who'd have thought banana bread would be...
Well, banana bread's useful because you can eat it as a breakfast food.
Apparently with your soft-boiled eggs, by all accounts.
Your chooky eggs was the the phrase from... I have never heard that before from Paul Hollywood.
Talking of Paul Hollywood, we've been speaking to him throughout the course of the morning for a variety of reasons. We've been talking about the rise of baking, the economic impact that baking has had, or the boom it's had during COVID. I mean, it's a boom, obviously, that they've helped to generate the bake-off team pre-COVID as well. I think that's fair to say. But we've also been talking to him about, well, what's next? 2021, a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. We know that Paul has just launched his new podcast. Is there the potential of that being done here in Dubai in the future? We know that he loves his motorbikes. We know that he loves his motor vehicles as well. He's done a couple of TV shows around those. And in fact, which I didn't know, he's actually competed behind the wheel in recent years. So, Paul Hollywood, celebrity baker, judge on Bake Off, what's in the pipeline for 2021?
I mean, ultimately, I would like, I did my Japan trip, which was successful. And now we're looking at other countries now. And I think we're sort of earmarking about three or four countries we're talking about, which is my next big trip.
Yeah.
So that's the next thing in the pipeline. And actually, I'd like to get a TV program off the ground with Shaky, where I think the podcast could be a precursor for that. So I think maybe doing something with Shaky and bikes and cars and him teaching me how to do track days on bikes would be a dream for me. So that's something we're talking about at the moment.
I mean, you're no stranger to a steering wheel. Obviously, your passion for motorsports is well documented. Are you okay on two wheels as well?
I'm all right. I mean, I was actually riding before I was driving. So although the thing is with Shaky, you'll back this up, I think when you're riding, if you come off and have an accident, it could be a life changer. If you have an accident in a car, especially in a race car, the way the kit is and carbon fiber monocoques and the way tracks are, you have runoff areas, you have kitty litter, you have big tyres to bounce into. The cars are so much stronger. The roll cages are strong. So the chances are you're going to walk away from an accident. I've had a couple of big spills at Spa. I had a big one, but I walked away from it, you know. And so the Aston Martin were great, and they sort of gave me this chance to try out the GT cars. And I was meant to actually do the Dubai and Abu Dhabi had some races. I was meant to go down, but it was cancelled last minute, again, COVID.
Yeah.
And we couldn't come down, but I was due to go down to do some racing down there. But the last big one I did a couple of races at Donington in 2019.
Okay.
And then I haven't raced since. I did a 24-hour race in Austin, Texas with Aston, and nothing since. So it's a bit frustrating. I do go out on the bike here, and I do a sort of circuit on the bike just to keep myself, you know, get out of the house, really, just do a circuit and then come back in again.
So with that in mind, and interestingly, you were saying that just before COVID-19 and the lockdown therein, he was scheduled to come out here and be part of a large race. Is there any chance there for Paul Hollywood of getting you back out to Dubai anytime soon?
I've done a few trips down to Dubai. I did the food festival in Dubai, which was really good fun, actually. Really enjoyed that. I think I was there for a few. I came for a holiday. I was stayed at the Palm.
Nice.
A friend of mine was the food director over at the Palm Atlantis,
yeah,
which was beautiful. And then I came back again to do some more sort of foodie fair promoting the food program. But I flew in from New York, and it was about minus 10 or something. And I flew in, and we were sort of in the shadows of the Burj Khalifa, and all the chefs were waiting for me. I was the last one. I said, "You should have eaten. You didn't need to wait for me." I was about 9:30, and it was 16 degrees at night. I thought, oh, this is special. This, and just to see the Burj Khalifa just sitting there, I went, it's a wonder, I think, Dubai. I love visiting Dubai. I've got some friends out in Dubai, and I love going there. I think it's such a special place. It's a treat, you know. And I was lucky enough to go to some great restaurants there. The food there is spectacular. Absolutely. That's what I miss. I'd love to go and crack on with the food. Or maybe go in the desert with a couple of toys.
New series of Bake Off goes live next week. Celebrity Bake Off, that is. Plus, of course, he's got his new podcast as well. And we'll be here in Dubai sometime soon. That was our little chat with Paul Hollywood.
Okay, so question for you before we go. 2 minutes. What was he? Was that a Zoom interview you did, or was it a phone interview?
Zoom.
So what was he like? Because I'm always more interested than the actual interview that we do. I'm always interested in the stuff around the scenes, if you like. I'm interested in the extra detail. Cup of tea, biscuit?
Nothing like that. It was a little late. It was a little later for me, late in the evening for me. It was a Sunday afternoon. Nice house.
Backdrop.
Nice setting. Very minimalist. Lots of natural light. It's just really chilled out. And we had a long chat. I mean, I'm obviously press record there. We had a long chat afterwards about mutual friends and bits and pieces that he'd done over here. So a few elements that weren't fit for broadcast.
Always are. Which we kept, the best ones, there always are.
Which we kept out of that one. Maybe we'll do our own little podcast a little later on. But yeah, just very genuine. And I think just one of those people that obviously, you know, he's very conscious of the fact that he's been very lucky in recent years. Mm-hmm. Bake Off has given him an extraordinary platform. He's taken advantage of that platform. He's become the focus of a lot of tabloid interest as well at the same time. He's very conscious of that. So it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Success in the public limelight and the public eye. But he's continued. And as long as Bake Off continues to have the success it has, then long may it continue.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.